the average person doesn't understand this process. To them, it looked like an extreme because they thought most people just had one surgery and they're done and they're happy and they go on with their lives. Because I think a lot of people, especially if you're just getting your boobs done or a mommy makeover, it probably is one and done, but that isn't for reconstructive or like post-mass weight loss. And so we're a different category, but most people wouldn't know.
Hey guys, it's Mel, your host of the Cutting Edge Podcast. This is a show where we talk transformation from every angle, body, mind, and confidence with a little sparkle and a whole lot of truth. I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Dr. Omar Betas and the plastic surgery pro, and Ashlyn Douglas Barnes, our go-to therapist and mindset queen. Now, quick disclaimer, none of us are your doctor or therapist. We are just here sharing real talk, real stories, and real growth. So grab your protein shake, settle in, and let's get into it. This is The Cutting Edge.
Hey, it's Ashlyn. Just one more thing before we begin. I will be sharing some of my own plastic surgery journey, which is personal to me and may not reflect what others go through. And if you're a current client of mine, please talk with me first before listening, because knowing personal details about me could affect your therapy. And your well-being always comes first. Now on to the show.
Welcome back to the Cutting Edge Podcast, where we give you all the most up-to-date information about plastic surgery and mental health. And I am so excited today because we're going to be talking about staging. Some patients have to actually go through multiple surgeries to get the end result that they want. And I know I have lots of questions about this. So I'm happy we have our experts on. We have Ashlyn Douglas Barnes with us and Dr. Betas. How are you guys?
Good. I think this is going to be what probably seems on the surface a boring topic, but actually one that creates a lot of, interesting thoughts, feelings, outcomes.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I agree. Sounds like a boring topic, but it's definitely not.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Well, because in previous episodes, if you guys have been listening, Ashlyn actually should have had staging or wanted staging, right?
So I ultimately had staging over cost, which then caused some people in my life to feel like I was overdoing the amount of surgery I had. That's and right. I had a revision in there too, which wasn't even part of the staging. But I think because the average person doesn't understand this process, to them, it looked like an extreme because they thought most people just had one surgery and they're done and they're happy and they go on with their lives. Because I think a lot of people, especially if you're just getting your boobs done or a mommy makeover, it probably is one and done, but that isn't for reconstructive or like post-mass weight loss. And so we're a different category, but most people wouldn't know.
Hey, friends, this episode is sponsored by findabariatrictherapist.com because bariatric life is full of ups and downs and everything in between, but you don't have to go through it alone. FindABariatricTherapist.com makes it easy to connect with therapists who truly understand your journey, the mindset shifts, the identity changes, and all the real-life challenges that come after surgery. Because therapy designed for bariatric patients changes everything. Visit FindABariatricTherapist.com and find your support today.
So I think this is probably also helpful for those who love someone who may be getting into, like, you're listening to this to be supportive to a family member, partner, or someone else, that this can set realistic expectation that there may need to be multiple surgeries, and it's not that your loved one is being picky or
selfish or
vain, or is like chasing this body that they don't have. It just may actually just be that's what's necessary.
Now, what's the most common staging situation, Dr. Betas, that you've been in with your clients?
So for me, I do breast and body. I'm going to exclude the face for the, sake of this discussion. But generally, that would be its own stage because a good facelift, brows, blepharoplasty, eyelids, all that neck usually takes about 5 hours. So that, unless you're going to combine it with like a quick breast augmentation or something very short on the body, is going to be its own stage per se.
Okay.
So for me, breast and body is usually two stages. And then depending on the patient, we can start with the lower or the upper. In some cases, I'll prefer to go one way or another, just based on experience. But usually I like to do the upper body in one stage, meaning arms, breasts, back, that kind of upper, let's say above the belly button area. And then belly button and below, or kind of breasts and below, I like to do in another stage. So tummy, outer thighs, buttock area, thighs, we can do in one stage. Again, that doesn't apply to everyone, but that's kind of the most common way we'll do it.
Now, when you tell them that, what are their like expressions? Like, are they happy to hear that? Are they frustrated? Like, what?
Or, that's a great question.
Are they surprised? Like, do people think they can come in and just like get it all done? Like, I want you to do the whole thing all at once. And then you're like, oh, by the way, we can't do that.
Yeah. So, I do warn them as we, so, you know, I mean, when I do a consult, the way I typically start is like, okay, what body areas are you interested in? And let's say they tell me everything, or let's say, you know, then I'm like, okay, I talk about all these things, but we're not going to be able to do them all together. So after we, I kind of go through each body part individually, you know, separately. So we'll look at the arms, we'll look at the breasts, we'll look at the back, tummy, thighs, et cetera. And then I will tell them, you know, we can usually get about three done in one surgery. So that would be like arms, tummy, I'm sorry, arms, breasts, back is three, right? Tummy, butt, thighs is three. And so as we go through that, we'll make a plan for each body part, and then I'll tell them this is how we're going to combine it in one stage and do these three together. And the next stage we'll do these three body parts together. And so it's very interesting when you say, how do people take that? So some people are like, oh, well, good. I didn't think we could do it all. Or, you know, I get we can do it all together. That makes sense. Then you have the people who say, oh, I thought we could do this all at once. And then you have others, like I had one a few weeks ago where like we made a plan and everything. And then, you know, a lot of times they don't realize how long some of these combination procedures can be. And so I had a consult like a few weeks ago, and the lady came back and she was like, I don't want a 12-hour surgery. And I was like, well, we can't do all this. Like, what do you think this takes? Like 3 hours to do, you know, three or four body parts.
Yeah.
And so she was like, yeah, that's just too long under anesthesia. So then you have those patients who are like, I don't want a 12-hour, you know, a 10 or a 12-hour surgery. I want like 8. And I don't know that 8 isn't necessarily less risky than 10. It's a long time under anesthesia. Yes. But you know, usually the risky part of anesthesia is the going to sleep and waking up. The length of time, there's been some studies that have shown a higher risk, but I don't think that really correlates necessarily with time.
Okay. Okay. So three body parts now, but if someone wanted like a 360 and then boobs, would you do that in one?
Yes. And again, it depends, right? So I've done, it really comes down to somewhat the length of time, or like, I don't want to be in the operating room 15 hours. So if it's a complex breast, right? Because breast can be a lift alone. It can be a lift in implants. It can be a reduction in implants. So depending on what you're having done, that amount of time can change. Plus,
we talked about where oftentimes it's actually an upper back or your armpits that are, so now you've added that without even realizing, oh, I just wanted my boobs done. But then when you actually talk about it, it's like, oh, that's not your boobs.
Yeah, the side part. You learn that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the other thing, is if it's someone who just wants a breast lift and then later on it's going to want their arms done, I'm like, well, that doesn't, like, those two combine better. So don't do the breasts with the lower body. You know, obviously, like, financially, if they're like, well, I want the breasts with the lower body first, and maybe I'll come back and do my arms later, like, that's a discussion we'll have, right? Then by all means, we'll do the breasts and the tummy, and then you can come back in 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, 10 years and do your arms later. But if we're, and that's where the consultation comes in, and we're having a discussion, how do you want to stage this? What's your kind of timeline? Are you planning on knocking these two stages out in the next 6 months to a year? Or are you going to do like, you know, your top three now, and then you might wait a few years before you come back and do your next two or three body parts? So a lot of that goes into the planning, but ultimately, yeah, you could do a lower body lift and like a breast lift at the same time. Sometimes I'll do it that way on purpose. Like a month or two ago, we did that because this one girl wanted a lift and implants. And in massive weight loss patients, sometimes that's really hard to accomplish because their tissue, you know, as you know, your tissue is just not very strong and supportive. Sometimes you do a lift and you come back through, you know, 6 months, a year later, and you have to do another lift because the skin just kind of starts to sag very quickly. So for her, I told you, let's do your breast lift in stage one with your lower body lift. And then we'll come back in, you know, 3 months or more, and we'll put the implant in and support it with the mesh. So that will give her kind of the best result by staging it that way.
I had a client that the plastic surgeon really wanted to do this part and then see how it looked and then do the next part once they saw kind of the finished product of stage one. And it was interesting because I hadn't really heard of staging quite like that. I think she had a lot of skin and it was going to be a pretty complex. It was mostly, I want to say it was maybe breast and into armpit, like an extended, but not all the way back. But then when they did her tummy, they put her implants in. So it was more like they wanted to, maybe it was more like what you're talking about. They just wanted to see how it sat and then put the implants in.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't call that staging, but what I will tell patients sometimes, you know, especially younger girls or people who just want to avoid a vertical scar, I'll tell them, you know, we might be able to do like a full lower body lift and then upper back lift, right? So if you do an upper back lift, you actually do kind of narrow the flank or the waist a little bit. And you do pull up and out to some degree. So you might get rid of some of this loose skin in the upper abdomen, okay, or like a reverse tummy tuck, for example. So while it's not staging, sometimes I'll tell a patient, you know, over, if they come in saying, I don't want the fleur-de-lis scar, the vertical scar, I'll tell them, well, you know, we have to do two surgeries. And then after those two surgeries, we may be able to get away with it. But if not, then you've committed to the vertical scar. And again, that's just a discussion we have. Now, there are some patients where it's like, you need the vertical scar. There's no avoiding it. And there's some where I'm fairly confident we can get away without it. But there's that middle person where, you know, you're like, yeah, we might be able to get away with it, but I can't guarantee that result.
So what kind of result are they looking for to not get the vertical scarring?
I think that, you know, that's probably individual in terms of, I mean, like, no one wants loose hanging skin, right? Like, they obviously don't want that.
Yeah, but if you're already doing a tummy tuck, won't everything be tight anyway? Or are we just worried that this middle part isn't going to be tight? Like, what are we thinking
here? Correct. Yeah, so sometimes you can do a tummy tuck. Yeah, okay. Sometimes you can do a tummy tuck. And if a patient has a lot of... So a tummy tuck fixes the skin below the belly button, right? That's what it's removing. It tightens above the belly button a little bit because we're pulling that down and stretching it. But if you have really bad quality skin in that upper, in the area between like your lower breast and your belly button, if the quality of that skin, or if you have a lot of loose skin in that area, is not very good, then that tummy tuck alone is not going to fix it. So in that case, you either need a reverse tummy tuck in addition to the tummy tuck or a fleur-de-lis.
I think sometimes too, like some people have like one stomach. So from the bottom of their boobs to the top of their bikini line is one line. And some people like me, there's like one tire, a second tire, a third tire. So there's actually like an indentation. So when you pulled it down, you could only get tire one and two, but you couldn't really get to tire three. And I didn't understand until like having that removed how much there was there. But I also had some of that lipedema there. So that required both lipo and then going in for fleur-de-lis. But I think I just had an unfortunate anatomy. Cause I have friends that like heavier than I am, but like very one, like one, what would you plane? Like one plane. I'm trying to describe this for people. Well, not
yeah, watching, for me, like I only have, yeah, it's one plane. There's no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a far more fortunate, anatomy.
I do take it in consideration for some reason all through high school. Like, even though I was getting wider, I was doing 100 sit-ups every day. So for some reason, I think that's why my front's good, but I just kept getting wider and wider and wider. I never actually got this way too much, but I definitely went this way.
That's interesting. I think there's just like, the human body is fascinating. I think that is one thing that like how people gain weight, where they gain weight, because I feel like though my highest weight was not as high as some that I know, the shape of me was not great. And so that was really challenging because how I held weight, where I held, like very tiny legs, tiny arms, apple mid, like it's just an unfortunate way to hold weight. And so I think that that definitely contributed to not being able to just have a tummy tuck with muscle repair and being able to call it a day. Again, like some of my, I guess, staging. Is there something like you're calling that isn't staging, but would be like having multiple, that's like just a choice to have multiple surgeries, or there's another term?
I don't think you would do it by choice. I think there's sometimes, I wouldn't call this staging, but sometimes like a patient will go, I think I was telling you guys about before I went live, but I had a patient come in and had a tummy tuck. And she comes in and she has like her outer thighs and her butt. Well, yeah, okay, you need a lower body lift. But the problem is when you redo or when you convert a tummy tuck to a lower body lift, you're usually reopening, I would say on average, 80% of the abdominoplasty scar. Most of the time it's the entire abdominoplasty scar. So now you've just essentially reopened that scar twice. So it's a lot more efficient to just do the lower body lift from the get-go. As long as it's done right, because I do a lot of lower body lift revisions too. So, you know, a lot of surgeons might call it a lower body lift, but it is just, you know, there's a difference between cutting out loose skin and then really pulling and tightening and contouring. And a lot of plastic surgeons are just kind of like pinching and that's okay. That's where I'm going to cut out. But if you lift and you pull, that's really what contouring is. You can remove a lot more tissue if you do it that way.
That was one reason I did not have a lower body. I never saw any pictures where people were left with butts. Like
You have to do a BBL or something to add.
Right. And I think, unfortunately, I was kind of originally when I had the first three, I was looking before that was like done a lot of, I guess, because I remember the surgeons would be so proud of the photos. They're like, look how much skin we got. And I'm like, this lady has no butt.
You have no curves. Yeah.
What? She has no curves. There's no def. And I'd just be like, oh, okay. I remember I like came out and I was like, that guy ain't doing my lower body lift. So it just never got done. Because I
even men, and they kind of laugh sometimes when I see them, but I'm like, even men, you've got to do some kind of BBL or augmentation for them because the lower body lift just flattens. I mean, it takes someone with volume, but the problem is the volume's down, you know, like let's say this is the curve of your spine. It takes someone from volume down here. And now you've just lifted it and you have this flat plane back to buttock area. So you have to do some kind of augmentation for the buttock.
God, that would drive me nuts to not have a butt. Like,
well, I was just thinking, like looking at the photo, because again, he was so proud. He's like, and I made this flap and I did this and I did that. And it was very special to him, whatever he did. And I was like, how does this person wear pants? Where did the
pants? Really tight belt.
I'm like, it's just their legs start, and the person was very thin, and you know, if they were going for like thinness, and you know, that's a thing for some people, but I'm like,
yeah,
this poor person was left without a backside.
Well, I think that's something to point out to our audience is like, look through those photos. Everyone has kind of a signature of how they do things.
And ask for post mass weight loss. I was just talking, I had a client today. We were just talking about, she's ready to do consults. And I was like, if you are looking at the 115 pound lady who had a baby and then returned to being 115 pounds and is now her results are going to look really different than yours. There is a lot less skin to work with. Her scar is probably going to look absolutely perfect. You might even be able to see some little abs. But that's because they weigh 115 pounds. It's like you need to see someone that had extra skin. You needed to see someone who had massive weight loss. Like you need, and if they can't show you that.
You need a lot of those pictures.
Yeah. And if they cannot show you that, then that's probably not who you should see.
No. And I've even seen people where they're really proud, like you're saying, but all their people come out like a box.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like even girls were like, Mel, like you should go to this person. And I'm like, no. They're all boxy looking. I want the contour, like what Dr. Beta says, like, and you can see it in your videos and in your people. Like that's the biggest deal. And I think people are just scared of hearing a BBL. Like they're like, I don't want a Brazilian butt.
They are.
You know? And very true. It's like, no, it's, you're really just lifting the butt, guys. If we just took the little weirdness around it off, like it's pretty normal. Like
a fat transfer.
I tell patients it's redistributing fat, right? Like you take it from an area you don't want it and we put it somewhere we do want it.
Yeah.
Which is funny because most of us would be like, yes, take the fat where we don't want it and put it somewhere we do. But I think there is some fear, maybe even because of like bad PR.
Well, and the fact of like when you hear someone that does a BBL, you think it's like this massive butt.
Right.
That's very true. Unfortunately, right? Yes.
You envision these
very like, overdone
huge butts, or like the lady that's on like an aircraft and just hitting people with her butt. You know, like so we're like in our heads, we're like, we don't want that. We can't have that.
Which I mean, you do have to like because some of it dies. Like I have had clients that at first I'm like, ooh, that seems like overdone, but then once it like calms down, it looks great.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I'm sure it swells.
What's the most amount of staging you've ever, like, have you ever had someone where you have to, like, you set out to have, like, four stages, or is two about average, three or more? Have you ever had to do more than four?
Two is the most common. Two is the most common. I'd say, I mean, if you're going to take average, probably two point something. Patients who've lost like 300, 400 pounds, those people need multiple stages, like five, six, easy. So one, their skin is terrible. And I tell them that from the beginning. I think the best way to put it to them is like every body part's going to be done twice. And it's not that you get a bad result the first time. It's just that the skin relaxes so much. You've got to go back and cut like another 2-3 centimeters. And then the other thing is there's just so much extra skin, you cannot do a very good job removing it all in kind of this combined approach. So for them, I stage it a little bit differently. Mind if I share my screen? I know we don't
have videos,
but I can show a
I'm excited.
Very good example.
Ooh. Everybody go to YouTube if you're not listening, if you're not watching right now.
We'll try to describe.
I know this isn't great for the audio viewers. Yeah, I will. So
that's okay. Go to RC Life so Podcast was on YouTube, hit subscribe and follow.
So this was a lady, she's in her 20s, super sweet girl.
We can't see it.
I'm going to show you one second, sorry.
Oh, okay. I was like, do you need a push button?
So this is actually one of the things I'll show some patients sometimes when they come in the office. You guys can see my screen?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, okay. This young lady had lost, I think she'd lost like 400 pounds, if I remember correctly. Wow. So comes in, wants her, are we going to pay you with Riverside with breasts?
What'd you say?
You're probably going to have to put a bar on that.
Okay. Yeah, Mel can
edit this. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, I will cover the nipples. Yeah, got it.
So she had lost, I think around like 400 pounds. And so when you have someone like this, you have so much skin everywhere. I mean, someone like her needs a breast lift. She needs a back lift. She needs a reverse tummy tuck. She needs a lower body lift. I think a lot of surgeons would have done a fleur-de-lis for her because she looks like she has a lot of horizontal excess, right? So a vertical incision is going to treat side to side extra skin.
Though I got to say, she is like that one plane. I mean, she is not the like multi-tire.
Yeah, the multi-tire doesn't work well with the fleur-de-lis, and I'll show you why, I'll kind of disprove that in a minute, because that's usually still excess in this direction, right? That's a vertical excess, not a horizontal excess, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So we staged her with a breast lift and a upper back lift, and then I kind of did a first tummy tuck for her. Her breasts are a little low, but she's always been that way. And so what I told her is I don't want to stage your arms with the first time. So we did the upper body minus the arms, right? So why did I do it that way? Because I wanted to bunch all the loose skin that I was going to pull off from the back into her side chest. And so and you can see here, she's got this giant bulge here. This isn't very nicely contoured. We've given her a nice waist. And I bunched all this tissue from her upper body into the side. So, and I told her, we're going to just bunch all this. It's going to suck for a few months until we get to your arms. But then when we do your arms, it's going to contour very nicely. So here's the middle stage. You know, that was after the first stage. Then this was after the second stage. And then we did her arms at the same time. So you can see kind of the difference between her arms here and her arms here. I think I might have debulked her arms too, maybe in the first one. I don't recall, but now you can see she's got a nice upper back. She's got a nice waist. The back scar did spread a little bit. Again, bad skin quality. So, unfortunately, that's kind of one of those expected things. And then, wow. So then at the same time, we did her, completed her lower body lift. So I went back in, redid the whole tummy tuck. Again, I warned her this was going to happen. But we didn't have to do a up and down scar. And in the interim, I think we had done a reverse tummy tuck at some point. So this was maybe like four stages for her. And again, you look at the before, after stage one, after everything was done.
Wow, that is amazing. She probably felt like she lost another 100 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to go back and see how much weight we took off. But I think I did eventually go back.
I really felt that way because look at her
it definitely wasn't 100 pounds.
Yeah, her pant size is probably halved.
Yeah, super sweet girl. I think I just recently redid her arms. Again, kind of like I was saying, a lot of these people just need everything twice because the skin just relaxes in your back doing another excision for them.
Do you have any idea how much all that cost?
Oof. It's probably over 100,000 with that many stages.
In my head, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same.
And if it's not over, I'm not saying like 180. I just maybe like, 90 to 110 or something like that in that range.
Yeah. No, but that's pretty amazing results. Oh, yes.
I'm going to show you this one. So, because you were talking about the tire, right? So I think this is what you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
So, and actually I had done a poll on this a few years back when I did this case. A lot of surgeons and people said that they would do the vertical. But the vertical fixes, again, side-to-side extra skin. This patient doesn't have side-to-side extra skin. She has up and down extra skin, right? Like vertical excess. So vertical excess is better fixed with a horizontal incision. So you have excess this way, you're going to cut it out this way and close it together.
Mm-hmm.
So we staged her.
Oh, wow.
Again, planned. So the first stage, I don't know why she's in a bra, but we did her arms, we did her breasts, and we did a reverse tummy tuck. But we got rid of this, what'd you call it, a tire?
Yeah, so tire number one.
Tire number one. So we got rid of tire number one.
It's interesting. She didn't want implants.
She didn't want implants. She's also young. She's like in her 20s. She's like, I don't want to have to get another surgery later on in life.
No, that's pretty amazing stuff. Great. So she had three stages or two?
Two. So upper body with the reverse tummy tuck. So that's why her scar goes across the middle. And then came back into the tummy tuck and we did some lipo on her back. Which
wow. No, that...
I didn't show because it didn't really matter.
That's amazing. And she's probably another one that felt like she lost 100 pounds.
Yeah.
Because, the clothing she would not be able to wear initially and be able to wear just bras, shirts, like where everything would catch in her original.
Yeah. And she's in her 20s and now this girl can wear a bikini and not have an up and down scar, right? A lot of people would have done an up and down scar and it would not have fixed this tire problem.
Yeah. You would have had to do the reverse.
This thing, when you talk about these tires, it's basically like, you have something, like, and Mel, you were saying you don't have it, but some patients in their anatomy, and you can actually see one in her arm right here. You see that crease? So there's something between the skin, that's kind of like cellulite. There's something between the skin and the muscle fascia that's tethering that down. So it's like a band of tissue. And it's kind of the same idea as like the band under your breast, right? That's what keeps your breast from the anchor of the breast or the breast footprint from falling down. That's why the breast hangs over because it's got that footprint. So this is another one of those bands. Here's her arm. She's got another one of those bands. So those, if you don't go in and either release them or release them and then cut the skin out, you're not going to fix the problem. So a vertical incision would not have fixed this. It would have just kind of, she'd have the scar and the band still. That makes sense. Or in the tire.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so that would be so unfortunate because if you've gotten rid of the bottom and she's still at the top, she still wouldn't be able to wear clothes. Like, it'd still be it's like, oh, you fixed the bottom part, but.
So the question that I have for you, when we look at the lady that Ashlyn is related to, like not related, but is relatable to.
Relating to.
A body type closer to my, I was like, I'm not related to either of those ladies.
Yeah, you're not related.
Yes, but the second lady who had more of a tire appearance or a bandit. It's like a bandit versus.
Yeah. Is there. Do we know, like, science-wise, like, why that happens like that? like why it does the.
So that's what I was saying. I think maybe you had hopped off, but there's we call them, they're like fascial bands or some kind of structure, right? Like in the breast, you've got your cup, right? Or where your underwire sits.
Okay.
That part, it has a structure fixed to your chest wall. And that's why your breast doesn't kind of like, this is better, like this doesn't all shift down as a unit. If the skin sags over, right? Because the structure is fixed. It does,
yes. Okay.
So
it's almost like you have two.
Sorry?
It's almost like you have two. Like hers were more bra-shaped. Mine was more all the way across. It did not follow the line of the breast.
Right. And that's just like an anatomical variant. But people have kind of like you said, like sometimes you find like three or four of those rolls on the side. You know, people have them on the back. If you look on the back, a lot of times you'll see like a roll of skin with like a deep groove. That's a band or like a fascial adherence. People have them on their arms sometimes, like here typically, and kind of the between like the second and third of the arm if you break it up into three.
Yeah, I had one rolling when I was bigger, but now it's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and if you look at that picture, I think I pointed one out on that girl, even though she was standing, you kind of see like a little band where her skin sagged. Everyone's different. Some people have them, some people don't. Some people have one, some people have three. Yeah. And so what I was saying is if you don't go in and release it or cut that band, right? It's kind of like cellulite, right? That I think we talked about that maybe one or two episodes ago. Cellulite is just a band. They're much smaller, but it's between the skin and the fascia, and it's just this little structure that's pulling it down. This is the same, except it's a very long structure. And if you don't go in and cut it and release it and then either pull the skin up or cut it out, it's not going to go away.
Now, do you see that more in extreme weight loss patients than in anybody else?
I think you tend to see more rolls in extreme weight loss patients, which means more bands. I don't know that there's any scientific data behind it, at least not that I've found.
And I just always find it fascinating too. Like I know someone who's like probably somewhere in the 300-400 pound range. I don't know for sure, but if I had to guess, perfectly one plane round, not a single roll. And I'm like, how? But bodies are weird, man. Like, why I in the 260s was roll. Like, I don't know.
Well, and I noticed with women, because I've been around, I'm obviously a woman. I've been around y'all's forever. And women that wear their pants too tight on their belly button area, like that's one of the reasons why a lot of women have that one roll right there.
I don't know if that's like what caused it or that's just where your pants end up sitting because of the indent. Like, I don't know if it's
we don't know if it's an egg or the chicken.
Right. I don't, because like, I definitely had that, but I don't, believe me, I did not wear, I hate compression, anything tight, but it's like, I think that's just where your pants sit.
I don't know.
It's weird because I definitely had that. That was like
one of the rolls. Well, yeah. Cause like, you know, when it sits, like it does, when I was bigger, one would go over, but my pants weren't crazy tight, but I had some girlfriends that like, you know, we're laying on the bed, we're helping them like fucking put it on, trying to like suck into these like buckle pants, you know, and
you make your tummy hurt. I don't want to walk around with my tummy hurting all day.
Yeah. I mean, I had to. I remember asking her and I was like, that has to hurt. And she's like, yeah, but my butt looks good. So, all right. So, and I get it when you're bigger, when you like a part of your body, you're going to show off that one part. So like hers was her butt. Mine was my boobs, but I didn't really show them off. I would just have a V-neck, you know, like that's about it.
Yeah.
So
I think one interesting thing with staging too, is like, I know that we have some people who have gone down to Mexico to avoid staging and have, because they will do it all. You could get head to toe, chin lipoed to your thighs, done all at the same time, like really long. I think there is one. It's interesting. I have noticed since COVID, like not as many people have been going down. There's one in particular that used to do a lot, but maybe I'm just not following the people that go down there anymore. But I mean, like literally chin lipo, boobs done, arms done, tummy tuck, thighs, but like, they're also the ones that I'm always worried about because they're getting blood transfusions. But What are your deep thoughts
about that?
About that.
I think, and I don't know the surgeons well, but I think it's like Rios's group, right? I don't know the name. There's like three or four guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, those guys they're very good surgeons. They're well-trained. I think the reason they can get away with it is because, if I'm not mistaken, when they do those longer surgeries, it's two surgeons. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure there are two surgeons operating together.
I would imagine, I don't want to misspeak who I think the name of the surgeon is, but I do know it's a group. It's still in Tijuana because they like pick you up from San Diego and bring you down and then bring you back. So you don't actually
stay. Are we talking about ERC?
What's the surgeon's name? Is it Galvin?
Dre Rios is one of them, and Omar Lazos, I think, is another one.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Again, I don't know much about them. I know they're board certified. I know they're good surgeons. I know they're, as far as I know, safe and ethical. I don't know anything bad about them. I can say that. Right. And I could be wrong, but so none of this is like factual information, but I believe if they're doing like a full upper and lower body lift, it's not one surgeon. I mean, I can't imagine one surgeon doing all that work by themselves. It's probably two surgeons and potentially even like more assistants to help them close. So they are just go, go, go. So I can see that, you know, being okay if they're getting it done in 10, 12 hours. That's a reasonable day in the operating room. You're not going to get surgeon fatigue. I think, again, the dangerous part of surgery is going to sleep and waking up. There is a study, I think I kind of alluded to this earlier. There was one study back in like the early 2000s, I think, out of UT Southwestern that showed that body contouring surgeries after 6 hours have an increased risk of wound healing complications.
Right.
And their conclusion was that it was the time. So I think their conclusion was correct, but it was not the cause and effect that was.
But if you need more surgery, chances are you have more skin to remove.
More skin. There you go. See, Ashlyn, you came to the same conclusion.
I'm not even a surgeon, and I could conclude why that might not be right. I'm like, wait a minute. Wait, it's like people that drown because they eat ice cream, but it's more people drown in the summer, eat ice cream in the summer. So it's actually because it's the summer and you're near water, than eating ice cream as the thing that caused drowning. That's interesting.
So I think the correct conclusion is the more length of incision you have, the higher risk of complications you have, right? If you have 3 meters of scars on your body from an operation, you have a higher risk of your body not being able to heal that. Because I've done, you know, 4 or 5 hours of lipo before. Those patients don't have a very high risk of their wounds breaking down. They have other risks. So again, you know, I think if they're doing it and they're comfortable, they're not getting any surgeon fatigue, 10, 12 hours, they're a team, they do this all the time, it's fine, right? I mean, I have friends in town and outside who won't do anything more than 4 or 5 hours, either because like that's their limit as a surgeon. They're like, I just don't want to do a case that long. I have a bad back, or I don't like sitting in one. I don't want to be in the OR for that long at one time. Whereas I'm okay doing it. You know, again, I do 10, 12 hour surgeries. I don't do them multiple times a week because I'm the same way. I don't want to do like a long case Monday, a long case Tuesday. So I try to spread them out throughout the week. But I think that group, as far as I know, has, you know, like I said, good results. They're safe and they're ethical.
If they're going to do it, make sure they're asking to confirm that there's going to be two surgeons that are going to be operating that long. So there are certain cases that you would do everything and everything. Like if you had a partner that you trusted, you would do everything and everything as long as you had another surgeon with you. I mean, I think in Florida, you're not allowed to, but from a like law standpoint.
I think in Florida, it's fine. In a hot, again, we have limitations on how much fat you can take out in a surgery center. A lot of this doesn't apply in a hospital. So I don't have those limitations, but how much fat you can take out if you're doing lipo alone, and how much fat you can take out if you're doing, like if you're removing skin at the same time. And I'd say those laws are based on a very old article.
I would say, why is that even a thing? Why would it matter?
Because people die.
If you take out too much fat, will I die? Like, I don't.
So, I mean, could you? Yes. Are the chances high? No, not if you're a safe surgeon. I've done plenty of patients where I've taken out 6, 7, 8 liters, and they do fine. Typically, though, again, it's more like a medical legal thing. If I take out more than 5 liters, I keep a patient overnight in the hospital.
Okay.
Most things in Florida only become law when a bunch of people die and they have to put some kind of guardrails because people in Florida are out of control.
But a lot of that too, Ashton, I think it goes back to, I think we mentioned this on a few... We talked about this a few episodes ago. People who aren't surgeons doing surgery, and that's usually when bad stuff happens.
Yeah.
Or aren't plastic surgeons doing plastic surgery, right? So, it's not unsafe to do more than 5 liters. There are things you have to be careful about, you know, because when you do liposuction, you put fluid in and you take fluid out, and then your body goes through inflammation. Your body has to absorb some of that fluid, right? The fluid that we've put in, your body's going to absorb some of it. So you can get overdoses of some medications if the surgeon is not careful how much they've given. And then when you start to do like 10 liters, for example, that's a lot of fluid for your body to absorb. And then you've got to pee it out and inflammation and swelling. So there are risks when you do more lipo. So if Barger is all there, I think they kind of like 5 liters is probably not the best number to use. But
that's okay.
That was
part of why you keep them in the hospital, so you can like do a catheter to like run the fluid out consistently, or more just for monitor, like what's the,
it's mostly monitoring, and it's mostly to give the patient fluids, because a lot of times they're not keeping up with their fluid intake.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Cause I don't think after surgery, if I went home, I'd be like, let's get some fluid in me right away all day. Like, you know, you're in pain. So I guess not the first day. You're still fine.
Yeah. The first three surgeries I had, I stayed overnight. That was just the surgeon's suggestion. And so I'm trying to think. I know I got fluids the whole time. I don't tolerate meds, but it was offered. I didn't have a catheter. I'm trying to think of like, I think it was more just one, I didn't have to go home. So I didn't have to like get in a car or wake up. I'm a very slow waker with anesthesia. So like that could be super timed out. Like that could be done very, very slowly. I didn't have to get up. Like that was nice. But it is interesting because the last three, I went home same day.
Which sounds common, that you should be going home. Because I was under the impression you should be staying the night. And Dr. Bates has corrected me on that.
Which in Mexico, most of the ones that we're seeing in Mexico, most of them are staying overnight in a hospital.
Yeah, they're staying like,
staying the same multiple nights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So Dr. Bates, have you come in the situation where someone, you tell them that they need staging and then they go, no. And what happens if they go, no?
I don't think I've run into that situation.
No one's told you no.
I don't think if I've told someone, well, so let me take a step back. There's been patients where I've told them like sometimes on a simple breast, like I was saying earlier, you should stage, or I think I can get a much better result staging someone. Again, that's not everyone.
Right.
And so again, that's a discussion. So if I tell them, you need a lift and then we can come back and do your implants. And they're like, well, I don't want to do surgery. I want to do it all together. So for me, the way I handle those is if I think I can get them a decent result, then I'll tell them you're going to have a very high risk of a revision. We might get you, like we have a small chance of getting you, you know, like getting it right the first time. But you have a very high risk of skin relaxation. And if that happens, you're going to need a revision and you're going to pay the price of the revision. If I think I'm not going to get a good result, like it's just, you know, 20% chance of getting a good result. So in my hands, I'm like, I don't want to touch this. And I'll just tell them, you know, I'm not doing this. Go find someone else. Okay. It's rare for weight loss patients to, I think, push back on staging because I think they know you're not going to get everything done. It's usually like the breast patient who's like, I want to, you know, they have like an old implant and they want a new one and a lift. Like I did that on Friday. I did a lady. She has old implants. They're ruptured.
How'd they look?
Yeah, and they're ruptured, and one was ruptured very badly, right? So when you have a bad rupture and you've got some of the gel leaking outside the capsule, it makes the dissection for me very unpredictable because I'm chasing kind of these like leaks of silicone. So you end up doing a dissection that's not, this is like old silicone.
Was she
injured? Someone who's had a rupture for a long time, like she's in her 60s, I think. She wasn't injured, but you know, she probably had a rupture for like 10 years and didn't address it. So the point I was making is you end up doing this dissection that's very unpredictable. And instead of taking out like a nice round implant, you end up taking like this abnormal shaped thing out of a breast, you know, so now it's like, you're dissecting here, you're dissecting out here. So now you haven't created a pocket, like a nice tight pocket for the implant to sit in. And so I told her, I can take out your implant, I can do the lift, but I'm not putting a new implant back in on the same day because it's going to end up like in your armpit or it's going to end up in your belly because there's no support for it. Everything's just kind of like, you know, loose. And I have some patients who are like, absolutely not, I want one surgery. And again, then it's my decision to say, yes, I can do it. You're going to have maybe a good result, but if not, we'll just have to do a revision. Or if I feel like, man, this is like, I have like a 5% chance of getting a good result, then I'm going to tell them I'm not doing it in one stage. You'll have to find someone else. But she agreed. We did her first stage Friday. That went well. So we took better implants to the lift. And then she'll come back in like 3 months and we'll put a new set of implants in with the mesh.
Nice. Nice. Like, I'm so I thought you would be injured if you go that long with a ruptured, like, implant. So how was she fine?
Injured in what sense?
Well, like if it's leaking, won't it hurt the breast tissue? Could it get on other things? Can it get into your system?
It can. Like, it can track towards lymph nodes, but that usually takes years and years and years and years.
Okay.
So, you know, when an implant first ruptures for some time, it's going to stay. And the timeline on this is like usually years. But, you know, is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? Is it 20 years? It's hard to predict. But, you know, when you have the implant put in immediately within the first few months, your body forms scar around it, right? So that's called the capsule. So I'm going to call that the capsule going forward. So if you, when your implant first ruptures, the fluid or the if it's saline or the gel, if it's silicone, sits inside that capsule.
Okay.
Over time, the silicone can start to leak outside the capsule. That's what this lady had. And like I said, that's like years. It's not like it ruptures and it's immediately out there. And over time, the gel will, you know, the problem is it's a foreign material, right? So every time a little bit of that leaks outside the capsule, your body's trying to form more scar around the new gel that's leaked outside. And so you just get this like reactive process of inflammation, swelling, scar, inflammation, swelling, scar. So it's a lot of like hard nodules, but the silicone can leak and kind of track up towards lymph nodes. We have seen that. We've seen women with like, I don't want to say golf size, that's probably the wrong, but like maybe like quarter size lymph node in the armpits that's just full of silicone. So can it get in your system? Probably once it's made it into the lymph node, it's gone somewhere else. But again, we're talking, that's probably like you've left the rupture alone for 5, 10, 20 years, who knows?
She was 10 years and didn't have that, so.
Her implants were 40 years old, 86, right? So almost, I don't know when she had them put in, but we're in 2026 now. And I don't know how long she had a rupture. It was years. It was like at least, you know, I think she only recently found the rupture. But if it's extracapsular and it's that bad, you know, as bad as it was, it was at least 5 to 10 years.
It's interesting that didn't come up on like a mammogram earlier.
Mammograms are not good at detecting ruptures.
Oh, even if it's all over.
I mean, maybe at that point, but it's not good at finding an early rupture.
Got it.
So that's why, separate topic, but FDA and like the Society of Plastic Surgeons recommends an MRI 5 years after you've had them put in, and then every 3 years after that. If you have breast implants and you've never had them imaged, get an MRI. Or if you see a plastic surgeon, a lot of them can do like an in-office ultrasound to look at the implant integrity.
Oh, interesting. Did not know that. I was told only to get an MRI if I had an airbag deployed.
If you feel something.
Yeah, if you feel something or I had an airbag deployed accident. Or an airbag hit them. Good to know.
That is good to know. Because I had no idea that was necessary whatsoever. That is wild. Okay, so for you, Ashlyn, as your patient, have you had these people be real upset that they have to do staging?
Yes. I think more just from like either unrealistic... I will say the internet has been very helpful for this. Okay. Most people in the mass weight loss world that watch other people have skin removal surgery are not having one and done's.
Okay.
Most of the people that are active on Instagram, like maybe some of the people that went down to Mexico, but most people have multi-staged. So I think nowadays there's a little more expectation of multi-stage, so they're not upset. I think more of the finances are what people are a little like, whoa, I did not know it was going to be 30, 60, 90, 100,000 to have multi-stage. And I think in their brain, the thought is like, oh, if I could have it all at once, it would be a lot cheaper. And I don't think that's necessarily, Dr. Bates can speak more to this, necessarily true. Yes, there's probably some cost savings, but I think that more people are concerned about how to pay for it than like that it's staged, than it's staged.
Yeah, I mean, you're partially correct, right? So yes, like, and it's funny because I had a patient, I mean, we have patients all the time who we quote for stuff and then they come back and they're like, well, I can't afford this. Let's start take things off. It happened the other day where we had done something staged together and then she wanted it broken out and then realized like, oh, I'm not actually saving that much money. And the reason is that I also have an assistant writer who helps close and helps me do things. So if there's more body parts to work on, I can move on to doing the next thing and start removing that, shaping that. And then she comes in and closes. So while she's closing, I can go on to the third thing. So, but then when you are cutting down the number of things and there's only so many places we can both work at the same time, so then it ends up not really saving you a whole lot of money. But yes, I mean, again, you're going to save money for two reasons by combining. Let's say one, we talked about this earlier, right? If we do a breast and a torso and an arm at the same time, that's one scar that I'm putting together. But if you do the arm and then you come back and you do the torso and you come back and do the breast, a lot of times I'm reopening the same scar. So now I'm doing the work twice. Same thing with like a tummy tuck, then having to do a lower body lift. If you pay for the tummy tuck, you've just spent a lot of money. That's like, let's say $12,000 to $15,000. And you come back and do a lower body lift, that's like $30,000. But you haven't saved any money if you did the tummy tuck first because I'm redoing the tummy tuck portion. Yep. So in that case, and we usually don't charge a full lower body lift if it's, unless I'm doing a lot of work. If you've had a tummy tuck and it's had, you had a good result and it's stable, I won't charge the full lower body lift, but you're still going to pay for the time I'm reopening that incision and some of the work I'm doing to cut out that skin on the front. Whereas if you had done it the first time, then you would have saved a good, like maybe $10,000.
Okay. Well, so there is a way to save a little bit.
There is a way to save.
There is a way to save.
But again, so, I think realistic expectation, as we often talk about with plastics, is the problem. So if your expectation is, I was going to walk in and they were going to be able to do everything, and now I'm disappointed because they can't, like there was no realistic expectation that that was going to happen. What did you say, Dr. Bates?
I said go to Mexico.
Go to Mexico, yes.
But no, go to Dr. Bates, get staged and do it right. Get it the contouring. Because that's really what we want. I think people forget, like, the word contouring actually means something of, like, for your body and how it actually builds a shape. Mm-hmm. And you need actual experts that know what they're doing with that, because not all plastic surgeons do that. And they're all over the United States, so you just have to really look and make sure they're safe. And also, you know, talk to them about staging. Now that we have a whole episode about it, you know, you have this information now. So you can talk to them and see, do you even need staging? Is that going to be something that you need? Is this something that you have to worry about? Talk to your therapist about it, especially if you're really frustrated. I know for me, when Dr. Bates was telling me, like, what I would want would probably be around 30,000, like, my fucking brain exploded. So, like, it's crazy. And so it's almost like, okay, do you
get a car for that money?
Yeah, that's more than my car, Dr. Bates. Okay. So my car was 19.5. So let's go.
How really old was your car that you have a car that was 19.5? Do you have a car from the, like,
I was going to say, how long ago did you get that?
You'll love me. It's a 2022. Thank you very much. Yeah. It is a Nissan Sentra SV 2022. Has only had one prior owner. And I only have 40,000 miles on it.
Was used.
But it wasn't new. I think those cars new are still more than 20.
New, definitely not. But also, your girl watched on Cars Guru for 3 months before I bought it. I was like, it's going to go down. I promise it's going to. I just need it under 20 and mama can do it. Let's go. But finances is a huge deal. And, you know, you guys have to really be aware if you do need staging, what that's going to look like. Do you need to start saving? Like, apparently, you know, some family members are really cool and like to help out with that stuff. And I don't have any of those, but apparently there is people out there. So, you know, check your resources. Never know. Is there anything you guys think we should cover before we wrap this bad boy up? I think we got a lot of it. Yeah.
I think so. This was a good episode.
Yeah. I think, like always, talk and listen to your surgeon. I feel like the advert always like, talk to your surgeon, listen to your surgeon.
It is.
Well, and I think it is reasonable to see, to get a few different opinions. I think it is important to, and I think we've said this before, go to a surgeon whose results you like. All of us put our best results up, right? Do we all have bad results? Maybe I shouldn't say bad. Do we all have not so great results? Yes. Do we all have revisions? Yes. Anyone who tells you they don't do revisions, or even for them, like their own patients, is lying. If they don't have complications, they're lying. Or they only do like one surgery a month, right? I mean, that's kind of the two options here. No one has no complications. And no one doesn't revise their own patients or doesn't have patients who need revisions.
No, see, they a surgeon just gaslight them instead and say it looks fine and it's all in their head. Yeah, and then they go to someone else.
They go see someone else, correct.
Yep.
I'd much rather a patient, if they're unhappy, come to me and say, hey, I'm not happy. 99% of the time, there's a fix for it. You know, sometimes you might not like that fix because it's more surgery. But, you know, most of the time, there's a fix for it. Rare portion of the time, a patient's just like obsessing about something that's, you know, either not possible or unrealistic or, and that's when I'll tell them, like, I don't think I can do anything for you. Maybe go get another opinion and see what you're going to find out. And a lot of times the answer is the same from someone else. But I think see surgeons whose results you like, and then understand that like skin removal is not the same. A lot of people call it like skin removal surgery. And I will say like, that's not what I do. I contour. So see someone who's going to help you shape and get the result that you want. Unless all you do want is skin removal. That's a totally different situation.
Yeah. Which you can do too. We've heard about it. Just correct. Like yes. Some of that stuff off.
And I think I'm like, learning lots. Heed the warning. Like if literally the surgeon that specializes in this is saying, I'm not willing to do this if you don't stage, he's turning away money. Yeah. So there might be a good reason behind it. So like, yeah. Listen to that. You know, sometimes I have to, like, my clients will say stuff and I'm like, bariatric surgeons don't want you to die on the table. They wouldn't say yes to something that's not worth it to them at all. And it's like, sometimes you have to like back that up. Like, if they're saying no, go see someone else. That's either they don't feel they're special or like there might be something to that. Like they really feel like you need to be staged. Like that would heed some like weight in me to be like, huh, that's odd. That surgeon literally said no.
yeah. Right.
Maybe I There's should figure out why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like,
yeah, you're right. It's not money, right? I could make more money if I staged you because you're going to pay everything up front.
Oh, do you?
Well, I mean, like if you're doing a breast lift and augmentation at the same time, you're going to pay it all then. But if I stage you, you're going to pay for part of it then and then the rest afterwards.
Think about
right?
too. What so if I have the first
financially,
surgery?
It makes it's there's no incentive.
And then I never come back because I'm like, oh, I ain't doing that again. Like, no, you are at risk of not having, you know, there's a potential that the second part of the money never comes.
Guys, I never even thought about it that way. So, like, yeah, you could stage it and then save yourself money in the long. So you just do little chunks. Can you do that with you guys? I know this is not really about staging, but like, can you say like you set your surgery out till like July? I don't know why I would, but let's just say we do that. We're in January. Can I like slow pay it? Would you guys allow that?
I don't think our office does, but I mean, what you could do is like put it in an account separate, you know, like put it in a little savings account or like some little fund account that you don't touch. What we do, what we take is care credit, which you can pay over time.
Right. Right.
So the one of the last ones I did, they had an office kind of near my office and I did go every month leading up to it and I just paid. I'm sure they didn't love me for that because you pay every swipe, but I did pay off the total by the time I got to the end. But I just am someone that I like need the money out of my account.
Yeah.
So
you prepaid it by like installments, basically.
So I had like 3 or 4 months before surgery. So I just walk into the office and be like, hey, I want to put another $1,000 or $1,500 down. Mm. And then the day of, it's when I put like the rest that was going to go on care credit. So that way I knew the day that I put it on the care credit. I had paid as much as I could prior to that. I don't think they offer that. I think I more was like, can I just show up and give you some money? And I'm sure the finance lady was like, yeah, we could figure that out. Like, you want
to
give us money?
We're not going to say no to money.
Yeah, but I don't think it was stated anywhere that that was like an option. I think I was more just like, I would like to come give you money as I have it.
I think you could probably do that for 3 months, but not like in our office, not 6 months out. In any case, I would, I mean, again, if that's something you're looking at for anyone or for anyone else listening out there, I would just say like put it in a little side account. I mean, a lot of banks let you create these like little side accounts, especially if you have like an online bank. And you can even like call it like by name. So you can put like plastic surgery if you're saving up for a vacation or a car and just stash. And you can like do auto transfer like $100 a month or $500 a month or, and then just leave your account. You
about the willpower not to spend it because it's in the little side account that you can just move as easily back into the main account. No,
that's my problem. And so, and I actually have done before is I just sent it to my brother.
I was going to say, send it to someone else. Yeah, send it to someone who's not going to spend it.
Yeah, like he just kept it in his Venmo. So he's like, this is just here until Mel needs it again. Because like I'm that person where if I see it, I'm going to want to use it. Or I'll start adding that into like the total of things. And I'm like, no, it's not available for me.
That was going to be the other thing I said, is send it to someone you trust. And someone you trust is not going to spend your money.
Yes. Yes. And my brother, thank you. I love you. You are not that kind of person. So, alrighty, y'all. Well, thank you for listening. I hope you guys actually watch this on YouTube because we actually got some photos for you guys to see. We have more coming that way. There's going to be more screen stuff coming up. So I really highly recommend to go over to YouTube if you haven't already. Hit the follow button. Make sure you're getting my newsletters because JBY information is coming out right now. So just know that is the bariatric award show that is on odd year. So it is April 24th of 2027, and it will be in Ashland, Oregon. And I can't wait to see everybody there. So thank you guys, and I hope you guys have a great week. Bye.